Support for Here and Now comes from BetterHelp, committed to supporting mental health through therapy. Clients are matched with one of 25,000 therapists and can communicate via video, chat, or phone at betterhelp.com/public.
Well, let's take a step back from the news now and have a conversation with a genius, at least according to the MacArthur Foundation, which gave our next guest one of 21 genius grants earlier this year. Khaled Matawa is a Libyan native who came to the U.S. with his family when he was a teenager in 1979. As an undergrad at the University of Tennessee, he had his eyes on a career in journalism, but a class in creative writing put him on a very different path. Matawa set his sights on writing poetry and translating Arabic poetry into English. He's now a professor at the University of Michigan, and he's with us from Ann Arbor. Professor Matawa, thanks for joining us, and congratulations.
Thank you for having me on the program and for your warm congratulations.
Well, let's start just so that people can get a sense of what it is that you do and that you won this genius grant for. I wondered if you could read us a poem in Arabic and then the English translation.
Sure. This poem is in Arabic called Naqar al-Khashab, or Woodpecker. نقار الخشب الزائر لم يأتي بداية هذا العام كما اعتاد وكما اعتدت الدوحة ظلت عارية جاهزة تنتظر لكن النقار تخلف لم يأتي بداية هذا العام كان النقار أحس كأن النقار أحس بأني أحتاج لا أن أسأله شيئا هل يتنبأ نقار الخشب لكن لو جاء إلى الضيعة نقار الخشب اليوم وانشب في الجذع المنقار الإزميل وصار يدق يدق لقلت له امنحني يا نقار الخشب الزائر منقارك بضع دقائق بضع دقائق حسب امنحني منقارك كي أفقأ عين السيكلوب وأنجو من حبسي. A woodpecker. The woodpecker did not visit at New Year's as he's used to and as I have come to expect. The great tree has remained naked, ready, waiting, but the woodpecker is late, did not come at New Year's Eve. It's as if the woodpecker felt that I needed to ask him something. Do woodpeckers foresee? But if the woodpecker had come to the village today, and planted his chisel beak in the trunk and began to tap and beat and tap, I would have said to him, give me, oh dear visiting woodpecker, give me your beak, a few minutes, that's all. Give me your beak to jab the cyclops' eye and flee my prison.
And I have to say, when you read the first one, I heard the word cyclops, and I knew that was what that would be. But that must be very difficult to do. How do you do that? What are the challenges in translating a poem from Arabic to English?
Well, the challenge is, I think, just as I was reading, Arabic has been written in many sort of different ways. But somebody who wants to get it right, if the accent signs are not correct, if it was naqara, which means would make the first word of woodpecker, if it was naqara, not naqaru, that means that it is the object, not the subject of the sentence. So if sometimes when you're translating and you mistake an object for a subject and easily like this, so that's one of the challenges, that the accent signs have to be correct. A lot of poets don't even put them. They expect you to figure that out yourself. I think the challenges of translating Arabic poetry are probably not different from challenges of translating from any language to another, in that you want the poem to have a musical quality in English. You want to catch the spirit, and you're always there's a tension between copying the form of the poem and also capturing its spirit, and you're always trying to find the middle place between them. I write poetry in English in generally free verse. And so when I translate from Arabic, I also translate into English free verse. Even if the poem is rhymed, I feel like trying to copy the rhyme scheme in English would not make the poem as strong an English poem, because then you will have to make too many inventions, too many compromises, and give the, I mean, in a way, sort of reinvent the poem for a rhyme scheme. And I never liked that for translation, or even for my own poetry, for that matter.
Where do you begin when you decided to start translating Arabic poetry into English? Where do you start? How do you know which ones to start with?
It began for me by picking up a book of the poet Mahmoud Darwish in a store in Brooklyn on Atlantic Avenue, and I was beginning to write poetry. I wasn't liking a lot of the results that were happening with my own poetry. So when I began to translate, it was really a way for me to almost look at the poetry from the inside, almost like the American legend of, you know, just taking the car apart and figuring it out in your garage, and that's how you become a good mechanic. Well, for me to become a decent poet, I needed to take great poetry and taking it apart through translation. So translation really taught me how to write poetry when I was starting out. And that's not unusual. I mean, when you think of the history of English poetry, the great English poets all translated from Latin and from other languages. Milton used to translate from Latin and also from Hebrew. And he really got his sense of what the English language ought to be by translating from other languages to it. So translation is a teacher of poetry.
It's Here and Now, and if you're just joining us, we've been speaking with Professor Khaled Matawa of the University of Michigan. Matawa won a MacArthur Genius Grant earlier this year. He was recognized for his work translating Arabic poetry into English. And Khaled Matawa, you're a Libyan native. Tell us about the poetry that you see coming out of the Arab world right now. Do you see a political message in it?
I think the Arab world has been sort of become tired of political poetry. That was really the age of the 50s and the 60s. Some of it was bombastic poetry. Serious poetry readers were looking for that private space. And so the poem that I read to you by Saadi Yusuf was, he's really a master of the poem of the private individual. We do have that image of this poem, perhaps spoken by Odysseus, who wants to flee, being imprisoned by the Cyclop. But it is all about longing, about connecting with nature, and about trying to find a better life. But that could be because of a political imprisonment or because of exile. The poet is not really perhaps interested in politics. He's the sense of imprisonment is more existential, if you will, than it is actual. The focus on the private has also created room for younger poets, for women poets to also explore their inner lives and also their private lives. Poets like Jumana Haddad and Iman Marcel and Maram al-Masri are really fantastic poets and women who feel legitimated by this private poetry. If I may add that the political poetry has never left the scene. And it is there to sort of excite people and to tell them what they already know. It seems to propagate tradition. And I never liked any poetry that propagates the tradition, whether it was in English or Arabic or any other language.
Well, and the poetry that you write, interestingly, is all in English these days, right? You're only writing English poetry.
I've only written in English. Yeah. I've took up English in my late teens and early 20s, and I haven't looked back too much.
But why is that? Why did you decide to do only English poetry?
Because I really did not grow up with much Poirot literature. I came from a middle-class, sort of nouveau, rich, petrodollar sort of family. My father grew up in the field, and then he ended up being a kind of businessman. And so we didn't have grow up with much poetry. When I came to the United States to finish high school and start college, I had time to read. I needed to read to figure out who I was and what I was going to be. And so all that I could find around me was English, and I read mostly fiction. When I wanted to write, though, I needed to go back to the Arab poets and to figure out how I can take something from their voice and put it into English. And so I translated in order to learn how to sort of capture that thing, that sort of cultural element that I was afraid I was might be losing by being in the United States for so long. So translation took me back to home, if you will, and gave me a new voice in English, which had become really my primary language.
Well, can you read one of your poems for us?
Yes. This is a poem called Ecclesiastes. The trick is that you're willing to help them. The rule is to sound like you're doing them a favor. The trick is to create a commission system. The rule is to get their credit card number. The trick is to make it personal. No one in the world suffers like you. The trick is that you're providing a service. The rule is to keep the conversation going. The rule is their parents were foolish, their children are greedy or insane. The rule is to make them feel they've come too late. The trick is that you're willing to make exceptions. The trick is to sound like the one teacher they loved. The rule is to assume their parents abused them. And when they say too much, give them an installment plan. And when they say anger or rage or love, say, that's too abstract. Give me an example. The trick is to keep the game going. The trick is that you're all they'll ever need. The trick is they feel you have all the time in the world. The rule is to get them signed up as soon as possible. The rule is everyone is a gypsy now. Everyone is searching for their tribe. The rule is you don't care if they ever find it. The trick is that they feel they can.
Mm. Khaled Matawa reading his poem Ecclesiastes. You're listening to Here and Now. And Khaled, how many people are doing what you're doing in reverse? How many people are translating English poetry and perhaps even one day one of your poems into Arabic?
There's quite a bit. I'm actually beginning to translate poetry to Arabic now, having become so involved with the Arab Spring and with events in Libya. I felt that translating poetry to Arabic would be a good extension of maybe my talents. But it's done to some extent, perhaps not enough, but it is done. It's not done a lot in terms of books because books are sometimes easy and difficult to publish. If you're willing to self-print in the Arab world, that's fine. But otherwise, publishers of poetry are really not all that available.
Well, which poems did you decide to translate?
Many. One poem that that I translated to Arabic was a section from Canto 81 by Ezra Pound. Emily Dickinson, We Grow Accustomed to the Dark. Robert Frost, What 50 Said, a poem about becoming 50 and letting the youth become your teacher instead of the other way around. I've been enjoying that a great deal, actually, and it's been wonderful to think of what international poetry or what world poetry can be when it is when I feel like I'm giving it to an Arab audience. It's a great prospect.
Finally, Khaled Matawa, I want to ask you, what role you think poetry plays in our culture, in our society, that music or other forms of art or literature just cannot do?
I think poetry gives us both the person of the poet and usually the inner life in a deep sense of the speaker of the poem, or perhaps the character that we are reading a poem about. We also get to understand things in a quick manner. Metaphor, Aristotle says, is at the center of poetry, and we see that all the time. One metaphor, one excellent metaphor, can convey a lot of deep feelings behind it. One common metaphor in Arabic about somebody who's no longer connected to other peoples might say, "I'm like a branch cut from a tree." And that tells you what that person feels or what his state of mind and his power or lack of power in the world. So it is making us pay attention to language, the person speaking the language, and language so compact that it says... Itself, it says a great deal and resonates with meaning.
Khaled Matawa, a MacArthur Genius Grant winner and a poet, translator, and professor at the University of Michigan. Thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to be with your audience and to be with you.